Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, I have a statement in from the Gardaí referring to the matters that happened in Sagart and around City West over the last two nights. They say significant criminal damage has been caused and there has been a significant impact to local community and services in the Sagart and City West area, particularly with public transport affected severely over the last two nights. Now, the guards say that four members of An Garda Síochána have been injured. All four received hospital treatment but have subsequently been discharged, and the Gardaí are providing them with all necessary supports and counselling supports, etc. To date, they say 31 people have been arrested, 28 males, 3 females, 5 juvenile males, and so far 23 people have appeared before the district court. The investigation into the serious public order events, public disorder events as they describe them, is ongoing and is coordinated from the incident room in Clondalkin. They are continuing to review CCTV and the body-worn cameras with intent to identify people involved in criminal activity, in addition to carrying out forensic examinations at a number of locations. They go on then to appeal to the public, in particular to young males, this statement says. Do not get involved in public disorder incidents. This is not fun and games and entertainment for social media. The choices and reckless decisions you may make to get involved or caught up in these events may have serious consequences and adversely affect the course of your future. And it finishes by saying this appeal for people with the ability to influence younger people to engage with the local community, engage with local people and appeal for them not to get involved in this criminal activity. That's a statement from the Gardaí on what happened in City West and Sagart last night and indeed the night before. Now, she's been described as a firebrand nationalist and security hawk and spent her youth as a heavy metal drummer. Sanae Takaichi is Japan's first female prime minister and was elected this week, and among the most pressing issues in her inbox is the cost of living crisis and growing disquiet there around migration. Christopher Harding is a senior lecturer in Asian history at Edinburgh University and author of the book A Short History of Japan. And Christopher joins me on the line now for more on this woman who is already being compared to her idol, Margaret Thatcher. Christopher, good morning to you.
Hello there, good morning.
So now, a lot in this new Prime Minister's immediate inbox is very pressing, but will you tell us a little bit about Takaichi's background, in particular her political background?
Yes, as you say, she's got this very colourful background on the one hand, motorbike riding, heavy metal drummer. On the other, I think she is from a tradition in Japan which is ultra-conservative, seems to go against that youthful image. But I suppose a little bit like Margaret Thatcher, she really believes in what she would call family values. So topics like same-sex marriage, which she's against. Also the potential for couples in Japan when they marry to maintain their own surname. She's also against that. She wants them to share a surname, and almost always that's the man's surname. I suppose also on the question of whether a woman can become emperor in Japan, she's also against that. So in all sorts of ways, I think, while Japan's feminists are happy to have a female prime minister at last, quite a few of them would wish for it to have been someone else.
I mean, there was an expectation that she would try and achieve a gender balance in her cabinet. And I think she did make some commitments in that regard, but that's not what she ultimately did.
No, I think there's been some disappointment there. I think she's having to be fair to her, it's a difficult balancing act. She has to keep a lot of unhappy people on side. She doesn't have a majority, even with her new coalition partners. So she's really struggling to maintain any kind of meaningful control. So I think some of the things she would like to do are going to have to go on the back burner just so that she can even stay in power. Technically, her party could be in power until elections in 2028, but I think a lot of people are only giving her a very short time to make an impression.
So, and she has to make an impression quickly because, as I said, she has these pressing issues. The cost of living crisis, that's something that's causing political tension in Japan, is it?
It really is, yeah. On paper, Japan's inflation doesn't look too bad. It's about 3%, just below 3%. But Japan also has this thing called a curry rice price index, where they take this famous, humble, nourishing dish of curry rice and they work out the cost of the overall dish because of these key ingredients. You know, things like rice, vegetables, fuel, also beef, of which Japan imports quite a lot. So you actually capture the exchange rate that way. And just a few months ago, the rate of that curry rice price index had gone up by 45% compared to 2 years before. So that's hitting people hard. I think in particular, younger people in Japan, people on low wages are really struggling. I think the minimum wage, the average across Japan, is about half of what we have in the UK, what we call the national minimum living wage or the national living wage. So it's really tough for people. Taxes are quite high as well. And I think one worry for Takaichi is that the populist right in Japan is really making hay with this. They're starting to link migration on the one hand with economic struggles on the other. And I think she's really either wanting to push back against that narrative or at least to try and recapture some of the voters that her own party have lost.
So has she said what she's going to try and do? I mean, she has been branded a hawk because she has this theory or strategy of Japan first. So do we know about any of the measures that she's planning to take?
Yes, we do. The Japanese first idea is one of her rival populist parties, but she's very much hoping to regain some of those voters. I think one of the things she wants to try to do, maybe a little bit unlike Margaret Thatcher, actually, is rather than try and roll back state spending, she actually wants to spend big on things like semiconductors, AI, food security. These are all things that I think she hopes will help to kickstart the Japanese economy on the one hand and also enhance Japan's economic security and independence in East Asia. As you say, she's a bit of a hawk on China. I think she'd describe herself as a realist on China. But one of the things she wants to do is to ramp up Japanese spending on its own military, something with which I think she'll see eye to eye with Donald Trump when he's in Japan next week. He's long been pushing for Japan to pay more towards its own defense. But I think when you put all those things together, Takaichi's hope is that you can get the economy going again, and that if you can do that, some of these disaffected voters who've moved rightwards might come back. They might abandon these populist parties and come back home to her own party, the Liberal Democratic Party.
And is she hoping that this economic investment and this drive to improve the economy will then in turn deal with the unease that some in Japan feel around migration?
I think she's absolutely hoping for that. The difficulty there, though, is that Japan has this declining population. So its population is shrinking by something like 2,000 people every single day. And a third of its population almost are over the age of 65, which again is a huge economic pressure because of pensions and healthcare, etc. So these are big structural challenges that Japan faces. And recently, or the last few years, there's been more and more migration encouraged by Japan's leadership. So you can get people into jobs like nursing, construction, industries that are really struggling to find people. They really need those people. But at the same time, there are claims on the right, particularly on social media, actually, in Japan, that when foreigners come in, they behave badly, they don't integrate, they don't really respect Japan's rules, and that Japanese people are being far too polite about it, and also that the political elites are being far too complacent about it. So I think even if Japan's economy bounces back a little in the short term, those big long-term challenges. What do you want? What kind of country does Japan want to be when it thinks about migration? Those sorts of things are really huge conversations that I think at the moment politicians like Takaichi would rather avoid.
And Christopher, she has this big meeting with President Donald Trump coming up next week. How do people expect that to go?
I think they're quite optimistic about that. The great mentor, great political mentor for Takaichi was Shinzo Abe, this very long-serving Prime Minister of Japan, 2012 to 2020. And he famously got on really well with Trump. He met him very quickly when he became president, and he brought Trump a gold-plated golf club to try and butter him up. And those two had a great relationship. And so I think some of that will carry across to Takaichi, whom Trump has described as a person of great wisdom. So I think initially the two will get on quite well. I think they'll see eye to eye. After that, I think it'll mostly be a matter of what Takaichi can and can't do at home.
Mm-hmm. I mean, his message is we hear one about military and defence issues, given that there are growing tensions in the region. Do you expect that to be a focus of that meeting?
I would have thought so, yes. And I think the two of them will probably agree that they have to have a more robust role in the region eventually for Japan's self-defense forces, as they're called. That's constitutionally quite difficult in Japan because under their post-war constitution, they're not really supposed to maintain armed forces at all. That's something that Takaichi actually would like to change if she could. So I think a more robust role for those defense forces. If Japan spends more on them, Trump will be happy, especially if they spend more on American equipment in particular, which I think is something we're quite likely to see. Then fingers crossed for Japan, that relationship improves and there won't be, you know, too many more surprises in terms of tariffs being levied on Japan.
Right, that's one to watch. And Christopher, thank you for telling us about the new Prime Minister in Japan. Christopher Harding is the author of a book called A Short History of Japan. Coming up next, we're going to find out just how dirty your toothbrush is.